Hello and welcome to another bonus episode of the iDidaPod. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and coming up, we have an interview with Appayauk Raitan, the first out trans woman to run the Iditarod and one of just a few Alaska Native mushers in this year's race. Appayauk is also pretty Norwegian, having gone to school in Norway, mushed dogs for tourists with the family kennel there, but also spent summers in Koktovik on Alaska's North Slope, where the family also does polar bear tours. Her father, Ketil Raitan, ran the Iditarod each year from 1991 to 1994, and then returned in 2016, 17, and 18. Her brother, Vebjorn Raitan, raced the 1,000-mile Yukon Quest in 2018. And as we'll hear, the family has also done a lot of long-distance dog mushing outside of races. We'll hear about that from our colleague, Shady Grove Oliver, not part of my direct Grove family, but a fellow Grove nonetheless. She did a lengthy interview with Appayauk for a story that ran in the Guardian newspaper, and Shady recorded 4 hours of interview tape from that. This version is definitely shorter than that. Let's bring her in now. Shady Grove Oliver, welcome to the iDidaPod.
Hi there. Thanks so much. It's really wonderful to be here with you today.
Hey, thanks for being here. Shady, first, tell me a little bit more about the Raitan family and their dog mushing adventures, because it really is interesting and quite a bit outside of the competitive aspects of the sport.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So they're a very fascinating family when it comes to all of their outdoor adventures. Ketil first came to Alaska about 30 years ago, pursuing a thesis on whaling. He's originally from Norway, and so his plan was to take a traditional 14-foot bucket sled and dog team across the Northwest Arctic and North Slope to Canada with a friend of his. They did the journey, and when they got to Koktovik, Ketil actually did an interview with Herman Aishana, who was the father of his future wife, Anguyak. He and Anguyak eventually got married, and they had 2 children, Vebjorn and Appayauk. So professionally, as you mentioned, the family led a mushing tour business in Norway, and also they have a polar bear viewing business in Koktovik, and they've done all of these things together. So they've spent so much of their time as a family outside experiencing the land, living off the land. They've done several long-distance trips together as well. As a family, they rafted down the Hulahula River, they caught squirrel and ptarmigan, and lived off of whatever they could find. They've also done several hunting trips in the Brooks Range, of course. And then they've had their long-distance mushing trips, which many people in the state actually might be familiar with already. So in 2016, Ketil and Vebjorn retraced Ketil's original route through the Arctic after the Iditarod. So they mushed home to Koktovik across the Arctic with their dog team. Then in 2017, Ketil switched kids and took Appayauk. Appayauk followed the Iditarod on snow machine and then traded with Ketil and took the dog team while Ketil followed with the snow machine. They had planned on that trip to take the course laid out in a book called Akivyuk, which is actually a semi-autobiographical book about the life of Andrew Akuchuk, whose sister was Appayauk's great-great-grandmother. So it was a very personal trip for them when they mushed across the Arctic in 2017. They did a brief stopover to run the Kobuk 440 in Kotzebue before continuing up from Noatak to Icy Cape to Wainwright and then running across the sea ice to Koktovik. The following year, in 2018, Vebjorn returns, and he and Ketil met their goal of traveling to every village on the North Slope by dog team. And then in 2019, we get to a really formative year for Appayauk. She ran the Yukon Quest and the Iditarod both in that year as a rookie. She was named the Quest Rookie of the Year for being the first rookie to cross the finish line. And she did both of those races in the same year. It was a very personal challenge for her. She wanted to prove to herself that she could complete both of them before coming out publicly as trans. It was like a personal milestone to know that she could get through very challenging situations and hardships before what I think she knew was going to be a very public challenge. After that, they stopped together for the Kobuk 440 again, and then with Ketil, she mushed back to Koktovik, and that was in 2019. Obviously, then the pandemic hit in 2020, and she's sort of taken a step back from mushing since then, but she's back this year and making history as the first out trans woman to compete in the race.
Yeah, and carried the trans flag through the ceremonial start in Anchorage. Okay, Shady, anything else we should know? And I guess how do you want to introduce this interview with Upa Yauk Raitan?
Sure. So, of course, as you mentioned, it was a very long interview that we did. We talked for about 4 hours. And I think it's important to mention I've been writing about this family for about 6 or 7 years. So I've covered them throughout all of these different adventures they've had in their lives. So at times in the interview, I'll refer back to things that you might not actually hear. But I hope that they'll be explained through the course of the interview. We talked about her family history to her own background and love of racing. We talked about her getting in touch with her Inupiaq identity and her love of photography to her story of coming out to being a proud Inupiaq woman. So we'll hear in the upcoming interview about some of the most notable moments from her 2019 run, her hopes for this year, and the fact that she is making history, and sort of what she hopes in the current climate when it comes to representation and acceptance of trans people. Something to keep an ear out for in the interview is that Upa Yauk mentions getting her tavlurun, and that is the Inupiaq woman's chin tattoo. So if you hear that come up later, that is what it is.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks for that explanation. All right, well, here's Shady Grove Oliver speaking with Upa Yauk Raitan.
What are you hoping for in this Iditarod?
Well, obviously, I'm hoping that I finish. But yeah, I just hope that me and the dogs, so I'm running mostly yours B team. So it's a lot of his young dogs. And I just hope that we have a good time mainly. And that we, like, I would enjoy if I could finish faster than I did last time, but that's not really a requirement for me, because I had a lot of very experienced dogs the last time I did it. So those dogs had finished multiple Iditarods. Some of them had like three Iditarods, and then they were doing their like fourth one with me. So it was like they knew what was going on. They knew how this works way more than me. But now I'm running with yearlings, and so I'm just hoping that we all have a great experience and that we have a good time and that we don't have any dramatic situations happening.
You've got a couple of dogs on your team this year that also did the 2019 Iditarod with you and the Yukon Quest as well. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
So with the dogs that I ran in 2019, I had done 4 races with them in that racing season, and I had also been the main person training them. Like Apuk and Kent, they're the only ones that are left from my original Iditarod team that are going on my team. I think Wiseman is going on yours team, and it's just Apuk and Kent that were on my original Iditarod and Quest team that we still have. All the other ones have retired. But those dogs were actually, they were born in Norway at our kennel that we had there. So those dogs, it's a really special bond that I have with them, because they're old now, actually. They're 9 and 8. I've spent so much time with these dogs. And they're like family to me.
I know you've mentioned before that this is probably going to be the last Iditarod for Apuk and Kent, and that you're planning to keep Apuk as your only retiree pet. What's your relationship with him?
So Apuk is just a very extremely cuddly boy. And he's just so gentle, and he's so excited about going running. Oh, he's just such a teddy bear. Yeah, we've traveled probably like 4,000 miles just on Iditarod and Quests and Nome to Gaktovik trips. And that's excluding all the training. And yeah, he's just a very gentle boy.
You've spent so much time traveling across the backcountry with your dogs, from your trips with your dad across the Arctic to races like the Kobuk 440, the Iditarod, and the Quest. What is it about mushing that really draws you in?
I really enjoy traveling with the dog team. For me, it's also with it being a part of my culture, traditional to be mushing dogs. Like Inuit people kind of like invented this, and it's a very beautiful way to travel. Like, obviously it's very different now. Like back in the day, the dogs were more freight sled oriented. They would be slower. You'd have probably fewer, and you would also be like, have a really big freight sled that you would carry camping equipment and hunting equipment and stuff like that. And now it's the dogs are different. They're faster. They're also not, they don't have as thick coats. And when you're doing these races, you don't have as much camping gear as you would. And you're also, like, obviously these days you're running at night as well. Well, it's because you're racing. So, and we have headlamps now. So it's kind of pretty different, but like the core thing of traveling with the huskies on a sled in Alaska, there's something to that that's very beautiful to me. And it's also the quietness of it. With a snow machine, you're obviously hearing the engine as you're going along. And usually with a snow machine, the way most people travel, everything goes by a lot faster. So I really enjoy slower, more kind of low-tech ways of traveling. I really enjoy sailing as well. So I've been sailing with tall ships. Actually, there was a while where I was doing it every summer, but then the pandemic, so haven't been doing it for a couple of years. But I really enjoy ways of travel where the journey is like what is happening.
What's something that was challenging from the last Iditarod that you'll be keeping an eye on this time around?
I overslept quite a lot. I had many checkpoints where I stayed a lot more longer than I had planned, because I would oversleep and I would literally not wake up no matter what the alarm did. On the Yukon Quest once, at one checkpoint, they said that I sat up, looked around, and laid back down, and I have no memory of that happening. I'm very interested to see how the sleeping will go on the Iditarod this time.
Back in 2019, some of the photos shared of you also featured your broken sled that you'd had to fix out on the trail. Can you tell me about that and just describe what happened?
I broke the stanchions on my sled going through the, I think it was on my way to Rainy Pass, I think. I forget which checkpoint, but by the time I was through the Alaska Range, I had that stanchion broken. And I chopped down a little willow tree and like put it parallel to the stanchion. It was a fiberglass stanchion, so it was kind of like, it was holding together, but it was just like completely flexible in one part. And when I would get to a checkpoint, I would take the string off of my drop bags and add it to the lashing for the stanchion. And so by the end, I had a lot of string on that. I think in Ilium, I discovered a crack in my runner. So I lashed the back part of my sled where the brakes are mounted to the skis. I lashed that to the front of my sit-down section so that it would kind of hold together, and hopefully if it did break, that the ski would be intact enough for the runner plastic to keep it together. But luckily my sled held up all the way to Nome. So after you are finished his sled was sent to White Mountain in case that I couldn't, or in case that my sled broke. Because he had obviously finished like way before me. But I decided that I wanted to finish with that sled, even though it could have broken. But I knew from driving snow machine along the trail in 2017, I knew that the next section was less intense on the sled than the parts that it had already made it through. So I decided to give it a chance because I wanted to finish with that sled.
This year, you're making history as the first out trans woman to compete in the Iditarod. And the last time you ran, you weren't out yet.
So mushing is interesting in that there are no gendered categories. So the men are competing against the women, and there's always like quite a few top level female racers. Everybody knows that Iditarod is the thing to win. And there's been female champions. There hasn't been one for quite a few years, but just that there have been, it's a really cool thing.
Despite the sport being open and forgiving in a lot of aspects, there are also gendered ways of speaking about Northern sport culture, you know, like ideas of toughness and grit. And it seems like the narrative that we have around those things is often quite gendered. How do you feel about that? Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, that perception is definitely a thing. The masculinity kind of is upheld as it's kind of like idolized, and I think a lot of and people would say things like to me that implied that I was such a masculine person for doing the dog mushing stuff. Yeah. It's definitely a thing, like the perception of dog mushing as a masculine thing. But I've always I've always looked up to the female mushers. The toughness and ruggedness being ascribed to men is something that I strongly like disagree with in a way, because I've seen all the women in mushing, and also my experience of, so ever since like high school, like some of my closest friends have all been girls. I think a lot of men, if they don't make a lot of close friendships with a lot of different girls, they don't get to know some of the things that women go through. And so they don't realize how tough life can be for women.
You said earlier that being a trans woman is like living your life on hard mode. What did you mean by that?
It's like you're giving up privilege by becoming a woman, and you're also giving up privilege because you're a trans person. But it's also like, if I was cis, I think things could have been a lot easier for me. It's like transitioning is not easy. A lot of people have like lived and died in the wrong gender. And I just think that's so sad. I wish that it wasn't so hard to be a trans woman. I wish it wasn't so hard to be any kind of trans person.
How have you seen representation of trans people shift or change in recent years?
Well, it's a mixed bag. So like with the transgender tipping point, which was like 2015 or so, and we've had Orange is the New Black with Laverne Cox and right now with Euphoria with Hunter Schafer and with Pose, there's all of these great representations of trans people and with Elliot Page coming out, like people now cannot ignore the fact that trans people are here. But there's also a rise in anti-trans legislation. And there is one in Alaska right now. Basically, it will just ban trans women from participating in women's sports in schools. that's just so horrible. That's just othering trans women kids in such a horrible way. And it's like happening like right now in my state.
Something I wanted to talk to you about is your name. Can you tell me the story behind it and why you decided to use it when you stopped using your dead name?
So my name, Apayaok, is my Inupiaq name. Before I came out, I had a Norwegian, or it's a very common name in both English and Norwegian, which was a male name, and I had Apayaok as my middle name. And so when I transitioned, I decided that I wanted to use my Inupiaq name, because I'm actually named after my great grandma. When I learned that, I kind of knew that I wanted to just start using my Inupiaq name. It's another kind of thing where when I had my male name, people would often just assume that I was white, because my dad is Norwegian and white, and so I can look white enough that people like just assume that I'm white. And that's another thing, like when I tell people my name, it's kind of obvious that it's not a Western name, and so then it gives me an opportunity to explain that I'm Inupiaq, and that's also kind of a part of why I got my Tavlugun, is because I'm proud to be an Inupiaq woman, and I want to show that we're still here. There's a lot of erasure of Indigenous people. And people talk about America and Canada as if we're people that used to exist, but we're still here, and still a lot of unceded land. It's kind of like a reclamation of being Indigenous. If I meet someone and I have my Tavlugun and I introduce myself as Apayaok, then they're probably going to want to know, and then I have an opportunity to tell them. A lot of people are awkward about not being able to pronounce it. It's like, yeah, you don't know how to pronounce the names of people from this land. Maybe you should feel a bit awkward about that. Maybe there's a reason why you're unable to pronounce the names that people from here have. Yeah, maybe there's something wrong with that.
If there is someone listening to this who hasn't come out yet, or who may be in an unsure place, what would you say to them?
I won't say that transitioning is easy, but it's like possible, and I think that most of the reasons that we tell ourselves that we can't, they might turn out to not be true. Well, obviously, you'll know your situation, and it might not be safe to come out to the people in your life, but the people that you lose, it might be more worth it for you to be living true to yourself than to be holding on to the people that don't accept you. So I would say that transitioning is definitely not easy, as the way society is right now. But the way that things are going now, more and more people are coming out, and it's becoming more of an accepted thing than it ever has been.
Coming into this Iditarod, you've been very open to speaking publicly about being the first out trans woman competing, which can come with its own challenges, though I know you've said that your family and friends have been a huge support for you. Why was this important for you to do, and why has it been important for you to speak very openly about this?
I know that this is going to be a thing. I'm going to get transphobic hate messages, but I'm still doing it because I think it's more important that trans people can see that they could be any kind of person that they want to be, and that you can transition. That was something that I was thinking for a long time, that, oh yeah, transitioning is something that people can do, but for whatever reason, this and that and this, I can't. But I just want people to see, people who are trans, to see that they can, and they can be fine.
That was Iditarod Musher, Apayauk Raitan, speaking with our colleague Shady Grove Oliver. As with all of our stories, we have more at alaskapublic.org. Maybe check that out. We'll be back soon with another full episode of The Iditapod. Thanks for listening.